Podcast. My name is Ben Stone, and this is podcast number 166. Today, we're going to have a special treat. Liberty activist George Donnelly was kind enough to allow me to interview him and record the conversation that we had. So that's what today's show is going to be about. It's just me and George talking about George's latest projects and the things that are going on in his life and some of his experiences. So without any further, I'm just going to go right into the interview with George Donnelly. Here we go. Welcome back to BadQuaker.com podcast. This is Ben Stone, and with me today is George Donnelly. And I don't think I really even need an introduction for George Donnelly. If you know who I am, you certainly should know who George is. George, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ben. It's great to be on with you.
There was a couple of things I wanted to ask you about and let you tell my audience about them. I've been talking whenever possible about agorism and about underground economy and about how we shouldn't wait for, you know, maybe not wait for somebody else to do things, but let's just get in there and start doing stuff.
Amen.
And you have set up something called Shield Mutual. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. Shield Mutual is an insurance company. It's agorist. You know, it's a counter-economic enterprise. And its purpose is to protect people from political crimes. So political crimes are anything from asking too many questions to being caught with a little bit of marijuana to videotaping police. There are a whole bunch of victimless and political crimes out there, and every day people are getting nabbed by the police for these, and it's ridiculous. We need to stop it. I think one of our first steps towards freedom is to open a bigger space so that we can be free, you know, so that we can, for example, trade, plants that are currently considered illegal, or so that we can go out there and videotape U.S. Marshals and police and whatnot and not be thrown in prison and, accused of assault and possibly face up to 8 years in prison and all these other kinds of nonsensical things. So the idea is that for a very low annual fee, anybody who could be at risk for being, accused of a political crime, and this is really anybody in the United States, as we've seen, even with no-knock raids, you could be the accidental survivor of a no-knock raid, and if you ask, too many questions about it, suddenly you could become a police target. And
yeah, actually, I'm sorry to interrupt. There was just a case not very long ago of a girl at her grandparents' house, and they did a hard raid on them because someone had piggybacked on their Wi-Fi and said something bad about the local police chief. So they do a hard no-knock raid on the house of the grandparents and, do the whole thing, throw everybody to the floor, the whole nine yards. Mm-hmm. And if anything had gone slightly different in that case, those people would be having to prove themselves innocent right now. And no matter what they say about the law, they would have to be proving themselves innocent that they didn't say those things over the internet.
Absolutely. And, when that happens to your family, you would like a little bit of justice. And so you may go and you may talk to the paper and you may give an interview or you may file a lawsuit. And, police take notice of this, and depending on where you are, what police are in your area, you could become a target. There are so many felonies on the books today that, there was a book that came out by a libertarian that said that everybody commits a felony three times every day. So
right.
It's just a question of, if they want to get you. So So what Shield Mutual does is, you know, we don't have unlimited resources to pay for all the damages that the state does. You know, I'm talking about the community here. We don't have Right. unlimited resources to pay for the lawsuits and whatnot, which may or may not give any kind of relief. But what we do have is publicity. And, you know, as a 20th century propagandist said, the price of justice is eternal publicity. And so that's what Shield Mutual does. When you sign up with us for a very low annual fee, we give you eternal publicity, you know, in any case where you need our help with political crimes. And that's long and short of it.
Let me add something, too, because I read a sort of a halfway criticism, but not really, just a sort of a more like a question. Mm-hmm. And that is that, you know, with any type of an actual insurance company that you would see, like a big name insurance company, they do actuaries and so forth, and they say, okay, we're going to insure, you know, 8 people who will almost certainly not need this in order to be able to afford to pay for 2 people that will probably use this. Mm-hmm. And so so the question that person had said basically was, you know, how can this work out? Because you're going right for a targeted audience that is high risk to begin with. Mm-hmm. But I think one answer to that, and you may have a different answer, but I think one answer to that is that all libertarians, all people in the liberty movement, and even people not in the liberty movement, as they begin to understand the police state that is rapidly coming upon us, really, in a sense, we're all randomly at risk. So the more people that hear about this and the more people that understand it, maybe what I would hope for anyway is that people would join on, like for me, I try to not break any laws. Of course, like you mentioned, in 3 felonies a day is shown that they can still get you if they want you. But I try my best not to break any laws that are going to give them grounds to come after me. Mm-hmm. So I consider myself a low risk person. But on the other hand, the low amount that it's going to take to put a little bit of money into this is going to give me just a little bit of satisfaction and a little bit of confidence to know that, hey, if they do single me out and pick on me, I have some coverage. Mm-hmm. And if enough people who believe that they're probably not likely going to be attacked like that, if enough of those people can get involved in this and support it, it's a really good way to support the movement as a whole.
Absolutely. Although, you know, this is not like a traditional, you know, state registered insurance company, because we don't promise to pay any monetary benefits.
Right.
What we do promise is that, you know, if you are accused of a political crime, we're going to mount a publicity campaign. And due to resources that I already have, skills that I've developed over more than a decade, and, you know, things that I've already done that have proven this, it's not very costly or difficult for me to, you know, put together a website, issue a press release, you know, organize a call flood, ask the community for donations should that be necessary, and basically just raise a lot of hell, you know, to get the attention of the police and the courts and whatnot, who are going to say, well, okay, this, you know, this guy, we've gotten a lot of calls about him, and we're getting a lot of mail, and we're getting a lot of bad press. You know, he's a difficult case, so, you know, let's try to get him out of here fast. And, you know, I have to say, when I was in federal prison in May of 2010, accused, framed, really, but what I was in there for was for videotaping. And mm-hmm. It was essentially a political crime. What happened was people called the marshals and the court and whatnot in support of me, and they took notice of that. They called me superstar inside the jail, and it made them kind of angry. But I think it also, you know, I'm certain that attention got my charges reduced. Mm-hmm. And I think it helped me get out of there faster than I would have otherwise. And so basically what this is it's labor intensive. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not really money intensive. So we can support, you know, the limits are just my time. And since right. this is a cause for me that's very near and dear to my heart, I'm prepared to dedicate myself full time to this. So I think that's kind of where it doesn't really fit in an actuarial model.
Right. Now, there were two cases, very famous cases, I'm not sure if you're aware of them or not, where a situation like this would have been critical and in one case may have saved a person's life. There was a guy who was in, I believe it was the Miami area, but I'm not sure about that, but it was in Florida. And he had some medical problems, ended up off of his medication. The police grabbed him, hauled him in, handcuffed him, had him tied up, and basically continued to spray him in the face with mace over and over and over until he died. Wow. And this took like, if I recall, it was like, it was more than 24 hours. It was like 40-some hours that they held him or whatever and just repeatedly held him naked, sitting in the hall part of the time, and repeatedly torturing him like this until he died. And essentially, his family could do nothing because they were made up of one poor woman who was calling the police station.
Wow.
And if she had something like this, then you could at least let the police know that people know what's going on, people know that person is in there, and there's going to be accountability for this situation.
Mm-hmm.
The other one I won't go into, it was basically the same thing, except the person was fortunate enough that they didn't die. But they were still held in there naked in a jail cell for, you know, extended periods of time under the same kind of circumstances. But having someone on the outside saying, we know what you're doing, we're seeing this and we're looking, a lot of times that can make a difference.
That's incredibly powerful, yes. And, you know, somebody like Pete Eyre, Adam Freeman, Ian Freeman, you know, some of the people who you know, make civil disobedience a way of life and get into you know, difficulties frequently, they may not really need my services because they already have a large number of people who care about them, who know what they're doing, and who are going to be there to make a phone call. But, you know, a lot of the other people who only do it casually or, you know, may not be doing civil disobedience but might be asking difficult questions, or might be videotaping. They aren't working in a big community like we are. Those people really need this service, and I think it's mm-hmm. very affordable. You know, it's not something that's going to break the bank.
Now, does the cost change under different circumstances, or is it pretty much a set amount?
I hope to keep it a set amount indefinitely. You know, if a lot of dollar inflation happens, I may have to raise the dollar price. But I hope to
right.
keep it always steady, you know, tagged or indexed to the price of gold.
And I assume, this may sound like a silly question, I assume you'll take something other than Federal Reserve notes for the service.
Absolutely. Right now we're taking Bitcoin in addition to Federal Reserve notes, and I'm looking into other options. And of course, you know, if anybody wants to, you know, has a payment method that works best for them, I'm flexible. You know, I'll do whatever it takes to accommodate our customers.
We have about 9 minutes before our first commercial break. You mentioned you were arrested in 2010, and I was kind of watching that from a distance. But can you kind of give us an idea of what happened then?
Sure. Hey, can I get in a little thing about our vision?
Oh, sure.
Okay,
go ahead.
Thanks. So I also wanted to mention that our vision for how Shield Mutual is going to play out 1, 5, 10, 20, or 40 years down the line. The idea is that Shield Mutual is going to kind of manage and you know, support the community who are really doing kind of the hard work here of making the phone calls and you know, letting people know that we're watching. But the idea is that as more people become members, and as we support more people who are in trouble, the police and the courts and whatnot are going to figure out who we are. They're going to take notice. They're going to say, hey, that's another Shield Mutual case.
Mm.
And the people that participate in protests and civil disobedience and counter-economic enterprise, they're going to be wearing identifying paraphernalia and carrying perhaps even optional membership cards. And so when they're at an event and the police are contemplating arresting them, hopefully at some point, and I'm certain we're going to get there, I just don't know how long it's going to take, they're going to see, hey, that guy's got a Shield Mutual shirt. You know, those cases, we already know, those cases are expensive because they call us and they email us and we get bad press. So we're not going to arrest that guy. We're going to arrest this other guy who doesn't look like he's a member of Shield Mutual. And I hope that 10, 15, 20 years down the line, we're going to get to the point where so many people are either members of Shield Mutual or members of allied mutual aid organizations that we're just going to, you know, we're going to nullify all the political crimes because we're just going to make it too expensive and too difficult and too painful for the state to persecute people for these things.
It's kind of like fruit. Some fruit is really easy to get to and very appealing, and other fruit is surrounded by a nasty, spiky covering on the outside. You can still get to it, but it's going to take some work.
That is a great metaphor. I like that. I like that. That's exactly the idea. Yeah.
Well, can you tell me about the fun and interesting part about getting arrested in 2010?
Sure. Well, I was there with Julian Heiklin, who's a senior citizen activist. He hands out pamphlets about jury nullification, about the right of juries to find people not guilty, even if they're technically guilty of the crime. You know, even if it, in the case where, for example, somebody's accused of marijuana possession, and the jurors say, "Well, all right, well, you proved he possessed it, but I don't really think it should be a crime," and they can acquit people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was there with Jim Babb and Julian Heiklin. Jim Babb's a good friend of mine and, you know, a super activist. We had been videotaping in front of courthouses in the Philadelphia area as Julian and Jim handed out pamphlets. And we reached this courthouse in Allentown where they were kind of cowboys. They had a cowboy attitude. I had been threatened at the Philadelphia courthouse, and my hand was cut by a security guard. But, you know, so far they had kept it kind of under control. But these guys were just out of control. A court security officer out of nowhere, as we were just talking calmly, just shocked me, and he grabbed my camera. And I didn't let go because it was a new camera. I didn't want to lose it. he let go eventually. You know, I didn't use any violence. I just held on to it, and I said, "Let go of my camera." I put it between both my hands and then between both my legs, and I clamped onto it as hard as I could. And a whole bunch of U.S. Marshals poured out of the building. They eventually knocked me down and got the camera from me. It took them probably a good 60 seconds or so. And they got me up, but they didn't arrest me. You know, it's kind of curious looking back on it. They gave me a good yelling at. They pushed me around a little bit, and they went to confer. And I was just sitting there, you know, not handcuffed or anything. I could have probably walked away, but I wanted my camera back. And so I took out a pamphlet that issued by Homeland Security that says basically that it was okay for me to film. And I read it to them. And then I pulled out a little flip cam that I have, and I started filming them again. And so
I always have a backup.
Yeah. So one of the marshals took it from me. And then they said that I had touched one of them, so I was under arrest. And but the person that I said I touched, you know, the story kept changing.
Right.
First,
right.
You know, it was that I took a swipe at this lady that I was never really that near. Then I don't know. Then I struck her in the fist with a closed jaw. Sorry, struck her in the jaw with a closed fist. you know, and when they took me in, they initially charged me with felony assault on a U.S. Marshal, and I could have faced – I was facing up to 8 years in jail.
Wow.
Yeah. They took me to a local prison there for the night, and then the next day they took me down to the Philadelphia Federal Building, and they wouldn't let me go because I had firearms at home. And they wanted to have those in their possession first. And so they made me spend a night at the Philadelphia Federal Prison, which was kind of memorable. You know, not only did they make me stay there, but they put me in the SHU.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, like high security. And, you know, all the other inmates are wearing green jumpsuits, and they gave me an orange one. They put me in with a guy who had gotten into a fight the day before, And they came by the door every once in a while. You know, I lost track of time. It was just freezing cold in there. But they would come by every once in a while and kind of look in, and I could hear them laughing. And, you know, they were getting a good kick out of it.
It would have been nice if you would have had a mutual assurance agency, mutual aid agency to help you.
Yes, yes, that would have been nice. Very nice. Although, you know, I have to say that really the community stepped up for me there. They were making phone calls. They were getting the word out. You know, it was kind of a spontaneous order kind of thing. And the next day, some friends that I made were telling me that the marshals were saying that I was the next Timothy McVeigh.
Mm.
You know, so they were painting their narrative.
Yeah, yeah.
It was utterly ridiculous. But the fact that so many people called in, you know, that they even called me superstar, you know, in front of the other inmates, you know, I think that counted for a lot, because, you know, I'm in front of a federal building, you know, it's just a video camera. I own a few firearms that I have at home. You know, all it takes, they're going to plant a few bomb making materials, and, you know, I'll never see outside again.
Yeah. Or bomb making materials like Clorox bleach, and, you know.
Yeah. The capacity of these people to frame is only limited really by their imagination and their audacity.
Yeah. Let's break just for a moment and throw some commercials in here, and we'll come right back with this, and that'll allow me to save this this recording as well.
Okay, sounds great.
Folks, have you seen the silver and gold trading cards from Shire Silver? You have to check these out. They're specific weights of real silver or gold laminated inside trading cards, and they're a great way to show the world a better way to save, spend, and share precious metals. And now you can buy them using bitcoins or Federal Reserve notes. Folks, you really need to check this out. Go over to Shire Silver, watch the video on the main page, check out the list of merchants that accept silver and gold trading cards, and you can even learn how you can get paid to help spread the word about Shire Silver trading cards.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
And we're back recording. Okay, and back with me again is George Donnelly. And we were just talking about his wonderful experience in, I can't remember. Georgetown? Was that where it was? Allentown.
Allentown, yeah.
I have the memory of a gnat sometimes. Tell us about some of the other programs you work with. Probably the one a lot of people right now might know about is the We Won't Fly anti-TSA program.
Yes, my friend Jim Babb and I started We Won't Fly back in November of 2010. And right around a couple days later, another friend of ours, Meg McLean, she was harassed by the TSA in Orlando, I think, and she couldn't get home. So actually, it's part of the kind of mutual aid stuff that I was doing at the time. I hadn't yet founded Shield Mutual, but it was basically the same stuff. I helped her raise the money to buy another ticket to get home. And when she was interviewed by Ian Freeman on Free Talk Live, I grabbed that recording, I made a video with it, and I put it on YouTube, and it just exploded. I think it's got more than 1 million views. You know, it was like the number two most popular video on YouTube for several days running.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was out of nowhere. I just couldn't believe it. But that was the same time where the TSA announced, you know, these pat downs, you know, the groping, you know, it was either going to be grope or scope.
Yeah.
So there was just a lot of outrage building about it. And, you know, I happened to post the right video at the right time. We built a really nice site. We launched some social media activities. We launched our campaign and we started to get media interviews. And then somebody came up with the idea of having opt-out day, a day where people don't fly or where they opt out of the scanning you know, to slow things down.
That became a pretty big deal, too.
You know, yeah, it's kind of surprising. It snowballed. We started getting media requests for interviews 3 or 4 times a day. It was 3 weeks of intensive speaking to the media for Jim, myself, and several other people that we kind of recruited into it. And not only U.S. media, not just local media, but also mainstream media, CNN, MSNBC, Bloomberg, you name it. One of us was on there. And also international media, we did some interviews with some people in Ireland, Japan, Buenos Aires, all over Europe. It just became something so huge and incredibly, incredibly successful.
Your We Won't Fly page on Facebook currently has over 20,000 likes on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
We got lucky. We brought out the right idea at the right time. And, my attitude towards projects like this, like single issue projects, is just keep bringing out ideas and, keep throwing stuff against the wall and see what sticks. And this one stuck. And I think that we really struck a blow for freedom, because the TSA administrator, the DHS, the Homeland Security Secretary, and I think even Obama had to go on TV, national TV, and defend what they were doing.
Yeah.
And on opt-out day, we have report after report after report that we basically shut them down that weekend. They were scared. For some reason, the media just really, blew this thing up even beyond what I thought it would be. And they got scared at Homeland Security and they backed down.
Yeah, there for a while, they actually, they really backed down heavy to try to quiet this whole thing down.
Mm-hmm. And now, we've been kind of in a holding pattern since then, but we're starting up in August, a new aggressive six-month campaign to put some new pressure on them, and we're going to have another opt-out day.
And that's going to time real well with going into the big, travel season through the holidays and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, also election day is coming up, so I'm sure hacks on the left and right will accuse us of being, motivated by partisanship one way or another.
Right. I've got a thing I've said about the state on a number of occasions. I've compared, a lot of people compare the state to a dragon. It's scary and it's covered in hard scales that you can't get past and breathes fire and hoards gold and all these things. but one of the things I mentioned about about a dragon is their scales are impenetrable. You can't, you can't shoot an arrow or whatever at a dragon. It'll just bounce off its scales. And I said, that's where the metaphor with the dragon and the state falls apart, because the state is actually not covered with impenetrable scales. It's covered with little tiny sticky pads that you can just yank off, little band-aids that you can just go up and yank off. And then you see underneath it, there's nothing but raw flesh. This thing is so vulnerable. Most people don't realize how vulnerable the state really is if you just expose it for what it is.
Yeah, I agree. That's very well said. Absolutely.
Now, you have georgiadonnelly.com as well, and there that's like a blog where you can read, where people can read your writings. you also have, like we mentioned, the We Won't Fly. That's wewontfly.com, and you have shieldmutual.com, and I'll put links to all three of those. Were there any other websites you wanted to mention while we've got you on the air?
Sure. I also, about a year and a half ago, I founded an online conference for libertarians, agorists, anarchists called Agora.io. And it's been very successful. On the first day of our first conference, back in 2010, I think, or 2011. It was 2011. We had over 2,000 unique visitors for that first day. That's
pretty good.
Yeah, I was really happy. And basically, anyone and everyone can participate in this conference. There's no travel required. It doesn't cost anything. Anybody can be a speaker, and anybody can watch the speaker live streaming video, because everything's live, right from our website, and can talk back to the speaker with text chat. So it's, you know, we've had really great people participate in the past, like Stefan Molyneux, Mary Ruart, and so many others. And people have really liked it because they get up close and personal with, you know, people who have really interesting things to say. And, you know, you get a really good conversation going about things. And the idea that it's going to be at least one, you know, medium through which agorists and libertarians and anarchists, we can come together and talk and make plans about how we're going to advance the counter economy and, you know, how we're going to advance our evolution or revolution, however you're going to see it. And so that's our third one is September 21st to the 23rd. And that's at agora.io. That's the website address.
Okay, and I'll put a link to that one as well on the page where this podcast appears.
Thanks.
Anything else you want to talk about? We've got about 11 minutes left in this segment.
Well, let's see. I recently wrote an article about you know, how libertarians are very good, and anarchists and whatnot. We're very good at you know, talking the talk. You know, we're great at analyzing stuff and figuring out, you know, what the solutions are. But we're not really very good at walking the talk. What do you think about that?
I think that's largely true. You know, it's really easy to, you know, I'll say it this way. For me, it was very easy for me to just keep my head down and stay in the industrial, in the military-industrial complex and not think about what I was doing. And even though deep inside, it was like a boil that just kept swelling, telling me, I can't stay in here. I can't do this. This is wrong. I can't, you know. And so many libertarians just keep their heads down and try to make it through to the next phase of their life or whatever. But really, at some point in time, whether we choose to pick our heads up and enter the fight or whether the fight comes to us against our will, one way or the other, you know, the state is getting to the point of where we're not going to be able to hide from it any longer.
Yeah. It's a little frustrating for me because sometimes I feel like, you know, for example, I tried to organize our second Agora.io in a more egalitarian, almost like mutualistic fashion. And I just couldn't find, you know, people to work with me on it, even though there was a chance to make money. And with the We Won't Fly on opt-out day, we organized people to pamphlet at 30 airports on opt-out day. And that was like pulling teeth, even though all of these people were, you know, all the people who decided to join us, we were sending them media interviews, you know. So it was almost like you got a free appearance on TV. But still, it was so hard to get people, you know, interested in participating. So, you know, it's just a topic that's kind of frustrated me, and I'm not sure how to go about, you know, doing anything about it.
Yeah, it's, and I you and I haven't talked about the Ron Paul factor, as I call it sometimes, but, you know, I think so many libertarians and liberty-minded people have a tendency to think in the back of their mind that, well, all we need to do is just vote for this guy or send this guy a couple bucks and I'm doing my part. You know, I got a Ron Paul sticker. I'm doing my part. But really that's really looking at it in a statist fashion. You're expecting the same processes that gave us this mess to fix the mess. You really need to get off the chair, stand up and figure out what you can do to be involved. Like, you know, have a podcast, join a group, volunteer some time. Pamphleting with the Fully Informed Jury Association is a great one.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I published that article, I received a few criticisms saying that I wanted people to martyr themselves. But that's not it at all. You know, even just taking the step of doing a podcast like yourself, that's an enormous step forward, because that stimulates conversation. It gets people more into the culture of the counter economy, you know, of the society that we want to build. You know, so I just want to see more libertarians doing stuff, you know, moving more parts of their life into the counter economy, or looking to talk more or help other people or whatever.
The infamous or famous Whoopi Goldberg said that you were basically a walking act of terrorism.
Yeah, I think that was the high point of the whole We Won't Fly thing when that came out.
One of the other women on the show that she's on, which I, you know, there are some things that I intentionally don't set into my mind. I intentionally don't put to memory. Uh-huh. But whatever that goofy show is that those people are on, one of the others said that that you needed to be on a watch list.
Yes.
And I thought, like, he's not already, you know.
You know, that's like a badge of pride for me, you know, really, because, you know, maybe I should be. I kind of am a threat, you know, to the existing order, just like mm-hmm. all of us are. You know, you're not going to see me blowing up buildings or shooting people. You know, I'm not into violence. I don't think, you know, it has its place, but I have a distaste yeah. for it. And I think we're a long way from needing it. And I think mm-hmm. we can do a lot with, you know, Gandhian style, you know, satyagraha, you know, like which translates as the force of truth. And, mm-hmm. You know, which is basically civil disobedience or, you know, resisting, but with love, you know, thinking about what's in the best interest of not just the oppressor, sorry, not just yourself, but also the oppressor. Because these TSA agents, you know, who arouse the wrath of so many, you know, they're being hurt by this too.
Yeah. Yeah, actually they are. Most people don't realize it, but in a weird way, they're victims of the state. You know, I don't want to say just like the rest of us, but they are definitely victims of the state in this.
Absolutely.
You used a word there that I've read many times and I've never heard it pronounced out loud. So if you could say it again for me so that maybe I'll learn how to say it.
Well, I'm not certain that this is how it's pronounced, but I'm pretty sure it's satyagraha. Because I think that's how Michael Nagler pronounces it. He's the guy, he's a professor at Berkeley. And he has that, he's in charge of the Meta Center. And there's a website they publish called Waging Nonviolence, which is very good. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so you know, I'm into satyagraha. I've been into Gandhi. I've been studying about him for at least about 15 years now. And you know, I just really think that's the way forward. We have to, you know, our anger, our hate, you know, talk of killing people and hurting people. I don't think that's going to help us.
Right.
You know, it's hurt. When we hurt ourselves first. And, you know, it's not going to, you know, on the public relations front, it's definitely not winning us any friends. So,
exactly.
Yeah. So, I think we need to keep in mind, you know, when we identify someone as a problem, like a TSA agent or a U.S. Marshal or even a president, we have to think about how they're being harmed by these things that they're participating in. You know, like in the Spanish-American War, I remember a lot of soldiers were conscripted or pressed into service or even perhaps volunteered. And, you know, at that time you might say, well, those soldiers, they're responsible for, you know, for the damage they're causing. But at the same time, they were suffering immensely. They didn't have enough, of the right gear. They were getting sent spoiled meat that was, mm-hmm. You know, purchased for them by, you know, a kind of crony capitalist contract there. And
dumped into an environment they weren't used to and diseases they had no resistance to.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, it was horrible.
So, yeah, so I don't want to absolve, you know, for example, TS agents or cabinet secretaries or U.S. marshals of their responsibility. But at the
right.
same time, let's separate the person and the act. You know, let's condemn the act, but
right.
let's not pass judgment on the person.
Yeah, this is something that many Christians have said, and very few have been consistent with. I don't mean to offend anyone with that, but very few Christians have been consistent in this, and that's hating the sin and not hating and still loving the sinner. Mm. The individual, the reason why a person makes decisions in their life is not always obvious from the outside. So when we see a person like deciding to be a cop or deciding to be a TSA agent or whatever, it's really easy for us to judge them and hate them for it without realizing, you know, what that person has gone through or what their options were or what kind of a position they were put in to have to take a job like that, you know?
Amen. Amen. For example, a lot of these TSA agents are people who are, you know, suffering due to the downturn in the economy. And, you know, if you're, you know, facing homelessness or you're going to take a job as a TSA agent, that's a tough choice. I haven't been in that situation. And I think that I hope that I would pick homelessness over that. But, you know, it's hard for me to pass really judgment on the person.
Mm-hmm. Folks, I want to talk to you about survival gear bags. Survival Gear Bags is about more than just great gear bags and survival kits. Check out their website by clicking the banner at badquaker.com. Survival Gear Bags has everything from Wise Food storage products to tactical equipment to camping supplies to clothing and rain gear to hydration and purification systems to books and DVDs. Plus, Survival Gear Bags is known for its service, and it's owned and operated by people who understand and adhere to the zero aggression principle. So get over to Survival Gear Bags and get the stuff you need.
So, Ben, I wanted to talk to you about this latest, Obamacare decision from the Supreme Court, where they said that, you know, as long as, you know, Obamacare is okay, you know, the penalty for not participating or whatever, it's okay because you can just call it a tax.
Yeah.
And, a lot of people were really upset with that. You know, it reminded me of when I think it was 2009, the Congress approved the bailout of the banks, despite the fact mm-hmm. that they were getting 85% or 90% negative feedback on that.
Right.
You know, people are kind of like, wow, well, all this negative feedback and they still passed it, but these guys are supposed to represent us, you know. and that's the kind of thing I think we have to put ourselves mentally in the counter economy or the evolution or whatever you want to call it, into our new societies. And recognize that these people don't work for us, and we can't expect anything good to come from them.
Exactly.
And when something good does come, well, all right, that's cool, you know. But like, let's, you know, it's probably an accident, you know, or maybe it works in somebody else's favor, and we just got lucky. But I think the fact is, we don't really have to worry about this stuff as much as we should be focusing on building alternatives that, you know, perhaps plug some of the holes in the cracks in the state system, you know, mm-hmm. as in helping people who are vulnerable and the state's not helping them or is hurting them. That
right.
You know, we could score some public relations points, you know, to kind of raise the mm-hmm. name of anarchists and libertarians, and something that can advance the counter economy, you know, something that's agoristic. For example, I don't think this would be easy, but we could set up, for example, a roving bus or roving clinic, you know, that provides really basic care to poor people, people who aren't getting it, who are, for whatever reason, the traditional, the state system is not serving them. It doesn't have to be complicated, but it could be a roving agoristic medical service providing service for free. Go ahead.
You know, there are doctors and nurses out there who are libertarians and anarchists and anarcho-capitalists, and you know they're out there, just like I was, what I was describing a minute ago, with my head down, just, you know, not looking and just hoping to get through it. But they're out there, and they could involve themselves in stuff like this, and you know, they could be the just like there's outlaw food wagons in all the major U.S. cities now that are doing that without license and without permission. There could be mobile medical clinics the same way.
Absolutely. And imagine that the day comes when somebody gets prosecuted for that. You know,
yeah.
We have universal medical care, but still people need this pirate, you know, medical clinic. And here the state is prosecuting them for it. Well, you know.
For giving out free or near free, maybe even, you know, medical help to people.
Uh-huh. To the poorest even. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. What a black eye in the state that would be.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You made a statement in an article you wrote where, you know, rather than getting all upset about the Supreme Court's decision and Obamacare and all this, maybe, you know, turn the TV off or just go turkey and go cold turkey and turn the TV off for 6 months and you'll get better. You know, you'll feel better about yourself. And I really think that's true. I try to avoid those people as much as possible, the mainstream media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did that. You know, it's easier for me because I live outside the U.S., but, you know, I still get CNN International here and whatnot. But, you know, I don't Fox News and MSNBC. I just don't see that. And so, you know, and I've kind of even given up CNN International. And every once in a while, if I put on CNN, you know, International, and I watch what they're talking about, it's entertaining. It's almost funny to see the points of view that they take and the things that worry them. I think it's healthy for people to take a break from all that mainstream media, because even though they claim to be objective or impartial, they carry their bias in there based on what questions they ask or what facts they report, et cetera.
I've said this before, and I don't really know how to express it properly the way it is in my mind, but the way I look at mainstream media, if you can stay out of it and not read it, not listen to it, not look at it for a certain period of time, and then you come back and just glance at it, it really appears comical, and you can see the fakeness of it. That you can't see if you're looking at it every day. And I know it's because of some type of a brainwashing effect that anything like that would have on you.
Mm-hmm.
But it just really seems like I'll tell you what it's like. If you're eating ice cream, and as you're eating ice cream, your mouth and everything kind of gets used to it. And if you just take a sip of room temperature water and then take another bite of the ice cream, then suddenly you can taste the ice cream again.
Yes.
And I think the media is like that. It dulls your senses and dulls your ability to see the falseness of what they're throwing at you.
Absolutely. And, you know, you tend to buy into their focus, which is, you know, everything has a legislative solution.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think our focus, at least those of us who are anarchists, is, you know, legislative solutions are kind of a fraud. You know, we need to focus on direct action solutions.
Right.
And I remember, you know, some of the interviews that we did with the mainstream media for We Won't Fly. And, you know, anytime a direct action solution came up, it was just hilarious for those newscasters, the people who were interviewing us. It was alien. It was strange. It was impossible. So that's completely outside their narrative.
Yeah.
But it's the meat and potatoes of ours.
It absolutely is. Absolutely is. George, I want to really thank you for coming on the show with me today. I really appreciate not only what you do, but I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with my listeners.
Ben, it's been a real pleasure. I've really enjoyed, you know, having this conversation with you, and I really appreciate the invitation.
Yeah, and feel free, you know, we're connected on Facebook. Anytime you have something you want to share with my audience, just drop me a note and I'll get us hooked back up and we'll get another interview going.
Thank you so much, Ben. I really appreciate that.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. We're working very hard to spend your tax money to keep you from hearing things like freedomfiends.com. That's why we're very upset about freedomfiends.cz. Freedomfiends.cz is a Liberty Media archive of Freedom Fiends material hosted in the Czech Republic. Freedomfiends.cz is outside the jurisdiction of the Watchers, who employ me, the Central Scrutinizer, to keep you from hearing things that might make you think. My fellow scrutinizers and I do not want you to visit freedomfiends.cz. Do not visit freedomfiends.cz.
Okay, so that was my interview with George Donnelly. Be sure and get over to badquaker.com and follow the links and go to George's different sites and see what he's up to. We've got listed there on the site. You're going to find georgedonnelly.com. You're going to find the link for shieldmutual.com. You're going to find the link for the Fully Informed Jury Association and wewon'tfly.com. And you're also going to find the link there for the Agora.io. So be sure and get to badquicker.com and check out those links. And as always, for more on liberty, the property rights, and the zero aggression principle, go to badquaker.com and be sure and check with us tomorrow, as we will have, in all likelihood, as I hate to say anything in absolute positive terms, but we're going to make every attempt to have some more information, some more recordings from Porkfest 2012 on tomorrow's show. So be sure and check back with us tomorrow. Thank you very much, folks.